On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dennis Rodman is a basketball star turned reality star turned self-styled international diplomat. The man has been to North Korea like 8 times over the last 8 years. And I got a chance to interview Dennis on stage at Politicon, a political festival where lots of politicians and political thinkers come together every year. But Dennis is ambivalent about talking politics. I ask him about Trump, who he endorsed, and Kim Jong-un, who he calls a friend. And Rodman says, hey, I don't get into politics. It's hard to talk Trump and Kim without getting into politics. They are inherently political. But here we are. Dennis cries at one part of the interview when talking about the American hostage Otto Warmbier, who Dennis says he helped rescue, a man who died shortly after getting back to America. Dennis feels blamed for his death, and he cried at the mere thought of the situation. It was real, it was heavy, and we had to deal with that. We talked at Politicon in L.A. in front of a few hundred people who heartily booed me when I said that Trump is obviously racist. Strange times, y'all. It's Dennis Rodman on Torrey Show.
Since this is Politicon, we usually talk about politics. Let's talk about your politics and where you are. You endorsed Trump during the campaign.
Where are you on
Trump now?
I've always told people that me and Trump, we're friends. We don't talk about politics. We don't talk about anything but just my life, pretty much my life. But I leave that to him and his government and his people in the White House.
Do you support him?
Friendship, yes.
As a politician?
Friendship, yes. I'm not really deep into politics, but I love to create politics.
What does that mean?
Huh?
What do you mean, create politics?
You know, like the North Korean thing? I created that. So I created that. So, you know, and I was just telling people a lot. I said, you know, it's amazing that people haven't really thought about this. And I asked him the question, did we even care about North Korea 7 years ago? We didn't even talk about North Korea 7 years ago. No one talked about it. And since we're gonna get it out the way. And people look at me and like, why is that? I mean, us and North Korea don't have anything in common, pretty much, right?
Okay.
So.
Are you still friends with Kim Jong-un?
Yeah.
When was the last time you talked to him?
Well, I talked to his party a couple of weeks ago. They still want me to come back over there, you know, because the last trip I was over there in North Korea was like a year ago, last May. And the people gave me such heartache for doing that. And I was just trying to, I was telling people for 7 years, I mean, for 7 years I was telling people, he don't want to create war. He just want to talk. That's it.
Well, hell, you've been there several times. How many times have you been over there?
8 times.
8 times? You know Kim Jong-un, you've seen the country. We've never been there. What are we missing? What do we not understand about North Korea and Kim Jong-un?
It was funny, though, how this all began. But 8 years ago, I guess the people in North Korea was reaching out for some sports figure to come over there to integrate sports. So they called the Chicago Bulls front office and they asked, would Michael Jordan be interested in coming to North Korea? And Michael said, hell no. He said, hell no, you know. Then they came with a second option and said, you think Dennis Rodman would come to North Korea? And this is the funny part. I said, you know, I said yes, you know.
Why'd you say yes?
Because, this is funny, because I thought it was another paying gig, just taking pictures, hanging out, and stuff like that. I knew nothing about North Korea, nothing, nothing. I think I'm going to go just signing autographs, you know, taking pictures, holding babies and stuff like that.
You didn't know it was a repressive dictatorship?
No, didn't even know that.
You just thought it was just, well, yeah. Let's go to Burma, let's go to North Korea, hey, whatever.
That was it.
Okay.
I'm like, wow, then.
At what point did you realize, whoa, this is a different country?
People don't believe that. You know, I know I'm kind of slow in certain things, but that right there, you know, it's cool though, because I didn't know anything about it, but the week before I was going over there, people started enlightening me about the country. And only thing I knew about North Korea is about the movies.
Okay.
50s to 60s to 70s movies about, you know, war and poverty and stuff like that. I started to watch that and get a good feel for it. But people were saying, wow, dude, I hope you come back. I hope that nothing happens to you. I hope you don't get shot. And I'm like, really? Really? I said, really, Penny, they do that over there? I said, I didn't know anything about that.
You didn't know the danger you were getting into.
No.
I love that.
And then when I landed in North Korea, everybody's looking out the window, see who has guns, who's going to do this and this. So when I walked out, I think everybody was shocked because they had all the dictator leaders, all the leaders of North Korea just lined up with a red carpet. And I'm like, okay, I thought this was supposed to be like a danger place, you know, I should be entering this hellhole, you know. So, okay, great. So I get off the plane and they all pretty much bow down to me. I mean, literally like that. I mean, they're shaking hands, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, I'm going down here, so I go inside the red carpet. I sit in this big room, something like this, but half the size, and everybody's lying against the wall, like you see around the world. I'm in the middle, and one of the dictators said, leaders over there said, do you know whose seat that you're sitting in? So this story would be real funny. I said, no, you know, I got all these interpreters around me. He said, you're sitting in the seat where our leader sits at. And I'm still being stupid as hell, right? I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So I'm like, okay, great. Who was the leader? I don't know, right? I've never seen the guy. So anyway, I'm just sitting there being dumb, you know, hoping that I can get educated real quick. So it's real quick. So it's like, all right, so everybody's having a good time. We're drinking vodka. So we're drinking vodka, drinking. And all of a sudden, we go to the hotel. And we go to the hotel, and I'm staying. And I was trying to figure out who was the last president to ever go to North Korea. Do you know?
No.
I don't either. I'm asking you.
Yeah.
No, I don't know, but... it was one of the presidency that Ben went over there, and I stayed in his suite. And it's this big, big room, like 3,000 square foot balcony, da-da-da-da stuff. So, and they asked me when I went in the room, they said, what do you like to drink? I said, Diet Coke. They looked at me so stupid. I said, Diet Coke, you know, Diet Coke, you know. Diet Coke, and the guy's trying to interpret it to him. He said, Diet Coke? He said, no, we don't have Diet Coke. And he came back and said, oh, Coke Zero. Coke Zero. I said, well, same shit, damn it. Same shit.
I agree.
Same thing. So I go back to the room, go work out. There's like a 3 cases of Coke Zero in my room. And every morning when we get up, there's about 30 people sitting in breakfast. I mean, food everywhere. I mean, food your eyes can see.
Where'd you meet Kim? When did you meet Kim Jong-un in this?
Well, I met him at the hotel. One of the leaders over there said, we got a surprise for you. And, you know, we go in there, sit 30, 40 people, sit them on a table, food everywhere, drinks, stuff like that. And the head leader, you know, underneath Kim Jong-un, came in and said, we got a surprise for you tomorrow night at the game. And I'm still playing like, I don't know what are you talking about? What's going on? I never seen a picture of him at all. So I was playing a game in North Korea, and it was funny. He wanted me to play. I said, no, I'm not going to play. So I went, sat on the bench, and it's like 20,000 people dressed in black and white. So I'm sitting down doing this. I got sweatpants, a jacket, T-shirt, hat, glasses, whatever. And everybody's dressed always suits, black and white. So all these guys come down, pick me up and say, come with me. Come with me. We're going to go up and sit up here. All right, so I go up there, and I'm sitting down, and I'm like, 20 people here, 20 people there, they all dressed in some stone face from hell. You know, that stuff's just stone face. And next thing you know, 20,000 people stood up and clapped. And I'm thinking it's for me.
And they clapped in unison, right?
I think it's for me. I'm like, wow, I'm special, you know. And the next thing you know, I look over to my left, here's up come this short guy. And the short guy walks out, like, you know, that whole thing he does. And so he walks up about 5'2", 5'3", and he's walking down this way, and everybody's just standing up. I'm sitting down, you know. I'm sitting down, everybody's standing up. So he walks over here, him and his wife. So he comes to sit right here, this close right here. And he comes to stand here. I get to get up like this, but he pulls me down. He said, so he's up there waving. And I'm like here doing this whole video. I'm doing this whole thing the whole time. Are they clapping? I'm like this. So who is this guy? So who is this guy right here? When everybody's like loving. And as he's telling everybody to be seated, and I never seen nothing like that in my life. You know, I never seen 20,000 people get so emotional. And I was just wondering, why are they doing that? I mean, people right here, like they're clapping, crying. I'm like, wow.
Well, why are they doing that?
I had no clue. But I'm saying, I had no clue. I'm like, wow, who was this guy? So next thing you know, interpreter said, you know who you're sitting by? I said, nope. He said, this is our supreme leader. And I'm still clueless. I'm like, who is this guy? And I said, he's the president or something? So he's a president? He said, no, he's our leader. He said, every statue you see in our country, it's him. I'm like, oh, okay. Now, then he started to hit me now, who this guy is. And it's so funny that after that, we was talking basketball the whole time, and he was so thrilled, so happy, the fact that America came over there and actually sat beside him and talked nothing but basketball, nothing but this average stuff.
But what is he like? Because we don't give any sense of what he's like as Americans. You've sat and talked to him. So what is Kim Jong-un like?
You know, he's funny as hell, though. Literally, he's funny. He's like 34, funny. 35 years old. He loves basketball. That's all he does. He loves playing basketball. So we played a game of horse. And that's all we do. We just go and have a good time. We jet ski, we water ski, we snowboard, we do everything. If people don't believe this, he does that. And
in the suit?
No, not in the damn suit. I got one of those. He just shorts, you know, T-shirts, stuff like that. So I'm over there, and it was so funny that the first time I was over there, and we had dinner one night. And he actually said something about, well, my birthday is coming up pretty soon in January.
He said that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I had this bright idea, you know, this, let me see if I can impress this guy. So about 20 minutes go by, 30 minutes, I looked at my people. I said, I'm going to say something really wild. Watch this. So I looked over here and I said, you know what? I'm going to give you a birthday gift. So the story. And I said, you know, I'm gonna bring a basketball team over here for your birthday. And he just stood up and clapped, happy, da 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 da. He was just happy as hell. And like, I'm still saying, this guy's a leader right now. I'm like, damn. He said, oh, that'd be so awesome. He said, you sure you can do that? I said, yep, I can do it. It's your birthday. And all of a sudden, I said, okay. After we got through doing us clapping, and he sat down, I looked at my people, and he said, I just really fucked up, didn't I? I said it's a really bad thing, right? Knowing I couldn't even do it. I just said it. It just came out like that because I'm gonna be the big man. So don't know the fact. All right. So the next thing you know, we go back to the States, and we're trying to figure out how in the hell am I supposed to take a team over there and pull this off.
And it was great, and we saw that on Vice. At what point did you say, hey, this guy's a repressive, homicidal dictator?
Well, I didn't look at that. Just to let you know, I didn't look at that. No, I didn't look at that because
Do you not care about that?
Where the deal is still...
Because the life that you saw with the dinners and all that, that is not how 99% of North Korea lives, right?
Well, my whole purpose for going to North Korea, and I keep trying to tell people this, I'm not there for politics.
Right.
Do you get that?
Right.
I say, I'm there for sports. Try to connect two countries together in sports. I'm not over there trying to ask that guy, don't chop his head off. Please don't shoot your fucking sister or brother. I'm not over here doing that bullshit. I'm not doing that. That's not my job. Okay? And it's amazing how the people have is trying to correlate the fact that it's going to actually work. You know, because we've been in so many different situations in our lives over the last 100 years that sports heals a lot of wounds.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Here's a lot of moves, even for that one day.
Do you think that your personal basketball diplomacy has brought the two countries together? Has it made North Korea a little less likely to maybe launch a nuclear weapon?
And again, I don't talk politics,
I created the
ambience of trying to get two countries together. And this is the funny part about this, that people didn't believe I can actually do that. But this is where the awareness about North Korea came. I brought it to the forefront. But the one guy, Kenneth Bay, brought it to the forefront. And that's how we began to understand what North Korea is all about. Because I got to throw a question at you. Did you, 8 years ago, care what North Korea was doing? Did you care?
I mean,
come on.
Yes.
Did you care?
Yes. Yes.
About what?
About North Korea.
About what did North Korea do to us 8-9 years ago? Us personally.
What did they do to us?
What did they do to us? I'm not trying to protect North Korea. I'm just saying, what did they do to us? I don't know.
Going back to Kim's father, there's been a consistent concern about them being a nuclear power, and God knows what they would do with that. God, would they attack the West Coast of America? I don't know, but that's been the concern. So, I mean, yes, I have been one of the million worries in the mind has been like, maybe, generally it seems like they generally tend to test to try to get our interest rather than actually do it. I don't think they would actually do it. I think they would understand the suicidal nature of that. But the worry, maybe they'll do something crazy. Yeah, I mean, that's been there for a while, yeah.
All right, so get back to my point. I brought the game to North Korea, and he was so thrilled that I actually pulled it off. As a company in London gave me $1 million to take a team over there, $1 million to take a team over there. And some guys were rejecting, I don't want to go. I said, I'll pay you $40,000 for one game. So everybody said, oh yeah, I'll go. So I go. So we get over there, and they're thinking like they're going to get kidnapped or get shot or held hostage or something like that. And I try to convey to them that it's not that bad. I mean, they love Americans. And once we got over there, they got off the plane. They couldn't believe it, how nice they were to the Americans, players.
You did get somebody released, did you not?
Well, I got a couple released, but the last one, they blamed me because he died. And that's tough. I didn't want to do this. But get it together, right?
No. Get it together. Issue. It's a serious issue.
No, I don't. Just get it together. I I got that out the way. Yeah. I had a big part to do with Ken and Bale. And I think the fact that I had a big part of it because I made the world aware of the fact that he was there. And when he was there, I talked to Kim Jong-un, and I'm like, so what's going on with this hostage or whatever, right? And we're on this boat, and he said, well, I don't know. We're thinking about doing something really good for the country, U.S. So we're on the boat, and I didn't even know this. I was sitting here smoking cigars, and that was Ken and Bay coming to the boat to see us. And he was going to release Ken and Bay right there. I didn't know that. And again, I'm not there for politics. I think the reason why he takes a likeness to me because, as he told me one day, he said, you know what? He said, you're probably the only American in the history of our country, your country, has not lied to me. So by me saying what I said to him, by bringing the basketball team, I'm pretty sure he think he didn't believe it. I know I didn't believe it. But when I actually did it, he actually just like I was emotional about it. Because he couldn't believe that someone, that he said, wow, somebody actually likes us. That's how he thinks.
I mean, you talk about I'm there for sports, I'm there for basketball, I'm not there for politics. But I think you see, you can't help but get dragged into it in a situation like that. And yeah. I'm there for basketball, and then next thing you're talking about Kenneth Bay, and then the auto thing happens, and you can't help but get dragged into politics in a place like North Korea.
Yeah, but the one thing we don't talk about in North Korea is politics. They want to talk about sports. And they did ask me one day about, if you could, Dennis, go back to America and ask the president for three things. And I didn't ask for that. They came to me and told me they want me to go back and ask Obama.
What did they want you to ask him?
The first thing they asked me, they said, could you have them move the ships farther away from South Korea?
Okay.
And the second thing they asked that he wanted to talk to Obama, who was president, about nothing but just talk. That's the second thing. And the third thing is more like, it's heavy politics. And we're sitting there, it's like six of us in there. And it's like 2 hours later, they said, that's okay, Dennis. That's okay. We don't want to do this to you. We're sorry about that. So just forget what we said. So I never said about that ever until now.
So you never said anything further?
No.
Sometimes you need stories that reflect the community, the culture, the world that you love. You can get some of that on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and how to create world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is an account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective and diving into the things that we care about and the stories we want to hear that center Black perspectives. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience. Turn on NPR and listen to Black Stories, Black Truths, because Black stories make up what it means to be in America, and stories should never be told without us. Listen to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. Back in 2018, Trump's Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries, while keeping the kids in the United States, separating and destroying hundreds of families. It was heartbreaking. And years later, hundreds of families still have not been reunified. I recently learned about an organization that's trying to make a difference. It's El Atrolado, and it works to reunify families, providing holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in America and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. They've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once they're reunited, they help each family find legal representation, housing, counseling, whatever they need to get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms just because you went to another country seeking a better life, and you never know when or if you'll ever see them again, and not ever seeing them again. We can't let family separations go on. It's inhumane. And if you're like me, and you believe that families belong together and immigration should not separate them, then join me in supporting El Otro Lado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to El Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gun.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved: fill out an application at their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer. El Otro Lado, ELOTROLADO.org/volunteer.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
We'll get back to the show in a second, but we all want to take care of our family. We all want to provide and make the people we feel closest to feel comfortable. That's why we go to the store in the middle of the night to pick up cold medicine. That's why we go to the ballet recital when we don't really care. That's why we drive them to the baseball game that's 2 hours away. Because we want to take care of our family. And if you're a good mom or a good dad, you're going to think about taking care of your family even when you're not here. You would make lunch for them if you were going on a trip. You would make sure that their clothes are laid out if you're going to be away. What happens if you die? Would you be able to take care of them then? You could, with life insurance. Seriously. And the easiest way to get life insurance that will provide them with money, that will take care of them, God forbid something happens to you, go to Policy Genius. In 2 minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers and find the best policy for you. When you compare quotes, you save money. 4 million people have gotten insurance through Policy Genius. So if you're looking for a good reason to buy life insurance, think about your family. You could think about the prices being at a 20-year low, or you could think about your family and how to take care of them and provide them with some income, God forbid something happens to you. Go to PolicyGenius.com, get quotes, and apply in minutes. Do the whole thing on your phone. Policy Genius is the easy way to compare and buy life insurance so you can take care of your family after you're gone.
We want to go to audience questions in a few minutes, but I want to talk to you about basketball because I've been a fan since the Detroit Pistons days and the, you know, all that. And I mean, like, for one thing I want to talk about is I remember you as a Piston and you were dope, but when you went to the Spurs and the Bulls, you were even greater, right? And there was something about you personally off the court that was totally different and on the court that was more electrified and more energized and even greater than you had been with the Pistons. What happened that led to that personal on-court and off-court change? Like, the worm develops after 93 with the Spurs and the Bulls, not really with the Pistons. So what happened?
93, that's when my life changed a lot because, you know, I tried to shoot myself one night, and a lot of things, I was going through a lot of changes at that moment.
Why did you do that?
Because I didn't like who I was. I was too much of a follower. I didn't know directions I was going at that particular time. So everything was just unraveling around me. Wife takes over my baby, steal my money, wreck my house. My coach is over here. My mom's in the hospital, da, da, da. Everything's just going nuts, you know. I'm like, whoa. You know, so basically, I wasn't actually trying to kill myself. I was just thinking I had the notion to go perform that act. You know, so I just went to in a parking lot, got a shotgun, held it to my head. Thank God. Thank God I went to sleep.
You pull the trigger?
No. But I said, thank God I went to sleep.
You had the shotgun and yeah. You fell asleep?
Fell asleep.
Because you were drunk?
No.
Why did you fall asleep?
I had no clue. And I was listening. I was actually listening to Pearl Jam.
Okay.
Pearl Jam.
Eddie Vedder?
I was listening to Pearl Jam. It was just mellowed me out. And I just fell asleep. And you got helicopters, cops and stuff around. And they pulled me out and da-da-da-da. Tried to take me to a psych ward or something. And that really just changed my whole perspective about living life. Then when I went to San Antonio, my life took over in a whole different direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you started doing the hair, right. The nails, the off-court stuff,
and tattoos.
And on court, you were different too.
Yeah, on court. I mean, I'm more of aggressiveness on the court. And I always tell people, if you look at some of my things I say on TV, I never played the game for money. I never did. I never played for money. You know, I just love the game.
You were a really special, different, disruptive player. Like, when you were on the court, like, different things would happen than when you were not on the court. Talk about what you tried to do on the court, especially defensively. You would completely change the game.
Well, I can't say that I could totally put that on my plate. I just think that I just had a good core of guys around me that actually supported me with the things I was doing on and off the court. And they let me do anything I want to do as far as being me. And I might... You know, I might go to Miami, dress up in drag. My good friend Elaine right there. So, how you doing? And I might go to wrestle in Detroit. I might go here. I'll probably go to, you know, London and stuff like that. But they let me do stuff like that during the season. And I respected them for that. And it's just, and like I said, I don't know how and why that I became who I became.
And I'm talking about some of your philosophies on the court, rebounding, which you were the best rebounder of all time, you know, and defensive, one of the greatest defensive players of all time. Like, what are some of the things that you figured out about rebounding and defense that made you so special?
I just understood that I understood the game of basketball. You know, I didn't try to go out there and learn the game. I tried to go out there and play the game the way it should be played. And, you know, we are enemies on the court, but off the court we're friends. And I look at it like that. So for me, as far as like surviving those years, all those years, I can remember a time when I started getting tattoos. David Stern came to me and said, Dennis, I need to talk to you. I said, what about, David? He said, you cannot get no more tattoos.
You can't get any more. You've reached the NBA limit. Limit is four. You can't have any more.
That was in 93, 94. And he said, Dennis, if you get any more tattoos, we're going to kick you out the league.
What? For what?
This is a true story.
For what?
This is a true story. We're going to kick you out the league. So I kept getting tattoos. And
Because how soon after that conversation did you get the next tattoo? Like the next day?
And, you know, living in San Antonio. Anyone been to San Antonio? Yeah, it's the Bible Belt, right? It's the Bible Belt, right? And I was getting tattoos, cutting my hair, cutting my nails, wearing women's lingerie and stuff like that.
And yes, we do.
I'll be on the plane playing Nintendo and stuff like that. And David Roberts be sitting right here, and I'm sitting there playing. And the whole time on the plane, he's doing this to me. Just looking at me just like this. So I say, you know what? I'm gonna stare right back at this guy and look at him and say, what's the problem, man? He said, man, why are you so crazy? You act like the fucking devil. I'm like, I said, what? He told me, I'm like, really?
Okay. Tattoos? I'm like, devil?
Like, what? Okay, guy. Whatever, man. So it's like this. But it's like, I think that's the main reason why I got released from San Antonio, because I guess they couldn't control me because I wasn't in their system.
You were part of the greatest season of all time with the Bulls. One of the greatest team of all time, play with the greatest player of all time, Michael Jordan. What was it like playing with Jordan?
It was awesome, man. It was awesome. You know, it's funny when you get around people that's inspired increase the level of livelihoods for people around the world. Mike is probably the first one to do it. You know, it's just amazing to see people that's so creativity-wise have so much to offer people. He had a lot to offer people. And Mike was, you know, they used to call him Black Jesus in Chicago, because, you know, he just, you know, it was like, you got Jesus, you got God, Jesus, and the devil. So Michael Scotty Dennis, that's what they used to call us. So it was like, okay, the devil, okay, got it. So
The Holy Ghost,
the Holy Spirit or whatever. But it was such a great, great honor to be there, because the people love the fact that, you know.
We heard that he was hard on his teammates because he wanted people to get to their highest level. Was he hard on you?
No, he wasn't. We rarely talked, me and Michael. You know, for the first year, I think I had probably two conversations with Michael Jordan that first year.
Two
conversations. That's it. I didn't talk to my teammates in the beginning. You know, I just want to go out there and play my game, get my bearings, get my foot, you know, playing to the ground, and that's pretty much what it was.
You stayed.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door, thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
Grabbing rebounds over guys who are 6 inches taller than you and more. Like, how did you do that?
I just knew the game of basketball, and I just every day I'd be in the film room at 4 o'clock in the morning, just studying the people. You know, I weighed 215 pounds at the time. Guys went 280, 290, but yeah. I knew how to position myself, know how to create a havoc because I was quicker. I could bounce, and most guys are so heavy, you know, to the low to the ground. I'm just like, so.
It seems like, and we're gonna go to audience questions in a moment. It seems like you're a very creative person, but the thing that you have created is you,
yeah.
Right? You have been the palette or the painting that you have been working on all these years. Is that how you see it?
It's the same thing. It's the same thing when I went to North Korea. You know, I got all this get up on, nails, hair, piercings, and everything like that. The same thing about that. It was funny how they welcomed me. looking like this. I mean, work. I mean, they didn't even look at this. They're like, okay, thank you. But even in NBA, I did create some type of image in the NBA as far as independency and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And now what you see in the NBA, what you seeing? Everybody got tattoos, piercing, everybody got all this stuff, da-da-da-da. It's a normal thing now.
You trying to encourage others to just do whatever you want to do?
No, I'm just saying, under certain circumstances. That's about it.
Ma'am.
My name's Sharon Rivera. I'm from Detroit. We loved you there, Dennis. We just loved you there. And the thing that I want to ask you is, I have five kids that grew up there, and it really hurts me that they have the impression that I support Donald Trump when he doesn't really do anything for us back there. And does, even though you say politics is not your thing, do you feel any responsibility to those kids who adore you and support you, who are being hurt by the policies of this administration?
It's a great question.
Well, like I said, it's a good question. I support Donald Trump as a friend, and what he does as president, I can't control that. A lot of people want to sit there and say, okay, great, since you're so good friends with him, why won't you go and try to talk some knowledge to him about helping people in certain cities?
You can control your feelings about it. She's asking you how you feel about it.
Oh, I feel okay. Well, I'll just give you that point. I feel about the situation in Detroit.
Well, I mean, she's talking about the policies of Trump do not support people who look like you and people who are your fans.
But, okay, I got it now. What I'm getting now is the fact that, let's get one thing straight. You know, like I said, I'm not here to, you know, throw knives at people back and vice versa, but I'm saying, everyone thinks Donald Trump is racist. Everything, he's racist as hell. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I don't
think
so.
Why not?
I don't think so.
Why not?
But I mean, it's funny how we look. Some people look with a blind eye. Did you see that piece the other day with Kanye West and Jim Brown and stuff like that?
Yeah.
That's amazing. They made some points right there. They made some good points, right?
Okay.
It made some good points in certain situations. In certain situations, they did. But you can say they're out of line. But I don't support Trump when it comes to okay, Gray. It's okay for the president of the United States, Donald Trump, to go pay a hooker $130,000 and then tell us not to do all this other shit out here, okay? It's okay for him to go sit there, okay, great, pay it, okay, it's okay. But it's like, and all of a sudden you got this whole thing that's going around Donald Trump, because Donald Trump have a tendency to say the most crazy shit on the planet. I mean, the most craziest thing on the planet. And we're like, wow, I like that president. He's making us money. The world's economy is coming back. Oh, my God. Then all of a sudden you get questions like, oh, shit, what about the communities? What about this city? What about this city? Okay, great. He's trying to do everything in the world he can. But, you know, but there's another person that's trying to do the same thing in Detroit. Since I'm going to Detroit after I leave here, I'm going to tonight. And the guy that owns the Cleveland Cavaliers, anyone know who that guy? That guy right there, he's buying up a lot of property in a lot of neighborhoods in Detroit. Look him up, and you should ask him why he's not doing anything. Why is he not doing anything? He's buying everything up in Detroit. He's buying up everything. And Donald Trump is not buying things. That guy in Cleveland has bought more stuff in Detroit's neighborhoods, property, and stuff like that. But you don't see that. But you want to put it all in the president? Okay, great. Like I said,
I'm just not sure how you can argue that he's not racist. He's quite clearly racist.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I don't want to make this a whole, like, you know, back and forth thing. Like I said, he's not racist. I mean, he's not. I mean, I don't want to see that in him. I don't want to see it. If I did see it, I'm not going to say it.
If you saw it, you wouldn't say it. Okay, go ahead, sir.
What up, Dennis? I'm Eric. I'm Detroit native. Gilbert did bring the city back, man. It's popping. But I have a more serious question. What kind of video games does Kim play?
Is that funny, right? He watches a lot of movies, and he watches a lot of. He does play games. He played Donkey Kong. he plays Pac-Man. He plays a lot of cool things, old games though.
Sir.
Okay, so.
Nice shirt.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so the research has been done, and Kim Jong-un, he is a despotic ruler who controls the media and is responsible for the death and suffering of many of his citizens. But similar things can be said about Donald Trump and Barack Obama. It's just part of the nature of being the head of state. You're responsible. So what allows you to put away judgment and just be friends with Kim Jong-un, even though he's been a cold-blooded killer? Like, what allows you to put that aside and just be friends with him and talk about basketball?
How do you put aside Kim's repressive, homicidal dictatorship, friends with him, just talk basketball?
How can I put that aside? I'm going to give you guys something that I said to him one day. And see what you guys think about this, what I said. I said to him one day, his birthday party, and we all doing toasts and stuff like that. And it came to him, he said, oh, thank you, Dennis, okay. So it came to me, and this came out of left field. So I just said, okay, great, I got something to say to you, man. This is what I'm gonna say to you. Thank you for having me in your country, you're great to me and my friends, stuff like that. But I got one thing to say to you. Your grandfather was a fucking hell of a mother. He was a bad guy. I said, your father was a motherfucker. This is what I said to him. And next I said, dude, I'm gonna tell you one thing, man. You've been so cool to me. You're probably the best one out of all three of those. And he looked at me and laughed and started clapping. And I'm like, and my friend said, you really fucked up this time. I told him that his grandfather was damn. His father was like hell. But him, he was cool to me. Because I don't know anything about that. Man, I don't know anything what's going on. That's what I've seen the military. I've seen blind kids perform in front of me. I've seen deaf kids perform in front of me. I've seen handicapped. I've seen everything possible in North Korea. But still, they sit there with get on their damn knees and they said, thank you, Dennis. That's what they do. And guess what? But you don't see that. Because if I ask people in North Korea, and I always do, I said, do you guys hate Americans? They said, no, we don't. You ever hear that?
Okay,
I'm just saying, though, they say that they don't hate Americans. It's the fact that how we have became this situation with North Korea and Americans. If you had the ability to go to North Korea and go sit down and talk to the people in North Korea, and then would you come over here and lie, or would you tell the truth?
Well, I'd tell the truth.
Okay, if those people are very nice to you, they were very nice to you, and Curtis did everything and said, please come back, we welcome you back, what would you say?
Okay.
That's a bad country?
No.
No, what would you say? I'm gonna say, would you go back?
Perhaps.
So there you go.
But you're talking about the rank and file. I think what my Nirvana fan brother is talking about is, hey, this guy you're friends with has killed a lot of people and made the lives of millions of people horrible, and you're just talking to him about basketball, and you're okay with that?
Well, I know one thing. I know the fact that his father passed the throne to him. He just got in power last year, pretty much a year and a half ago. So what he did over the last year and a half ago, I don't know. I mean, the first 6.5 years I was over there, I came over there, he had no control.
Sir.
Oh, hi, Dennis, big fan. I bought the popcorn t-shirt.
That's stupid.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you think that Pope Francis is going to have a good time when he goes over there, as Moon Jae-in has just delivered the invitation.
I know, right? That'd be fun, right? I mean, so it's like when Kim Jong-un went over to South Korea, right? And President Moon, I was over there in South Korea like last year, and they walked around the city and stuff like that, and talking about how they can join our forces with each other and join and put the two countries back together.
Right.
And that's the fact, though, How is that possible when his father wouldn't do it, but he's willing to do stuff like this? If he goes over to talk to Kim Jong-un, he probably have the same conclusion I have. And because, you know what, anyone here could tell me what Donald Trump said before he went in that summit. Can anyone tell me what the first thing he said when he walked in that summit?
What?
Can anyone say it? What he said, he got the car before he walked in the summit. You know, Donald Trump, he tried to be in control. He said, well, I can tell in 2 minutes if I like this guy. Remember he said that?
Okay.
That's the first thing that came out of his mouth. Okay. And he walked in. So he walks in there. It took him almost 6.5 hours to say, hi, God, I like this guy. This guy is awesome. But that's it. He said that. And then when he was sitting down like this, he was writing a treaty and stuff like that. Donald Trump was smiling, doing everything in the world, just giving that guy praises. He was giving praises. I'm saying, I don't care if it was fake or false or whatever, but he was giving that guy praises.
Go ahead.
So I was just wondering if Kim had any good jokes, and if so, I don't remember any.
Good question.
He has good jokes.
Does he speak English?
No.
So you're talking through the interpreter.
Interpreter, right? But you know, he don't have any jokes. I mean, he loves to just talk.
He's just funny.
He's just phoning in a moment and stuff like that. It's like when I play with his daughter, and no one's ever done it in North Korea. I play with his daughter and stuff like that, and I went over and gave her like a 91 jersey. She's walking around stuff like that, and he's up there clapping and laughing. And I'm like, okay, great. But you know, it's like those are the things I keep trying to tell you guys. Those are the things that I see. I don't want to go to any country on this planet to go see misery. I don't want to do that. If I have to do it, I'll do it. But I don't want to go there and have that. That's my last impression about any country.
You don't want to go and see misery. I understand that. But if you bring the cameras with you and you see a certain part of the country and 99% of the country is different, have you not given Americans a skewed vision of the country you went to?
Well, I tried to take my camera crew last time to show the first 6 years I was over there, and then the last 2 years I've been over there. He has changed the culture so much. He has torn down so much of the poverty and made it so modern, and nobody sees that. I think he's changed like 45% of the whole city now, and he's trying to change a lot. He has the largest...
You're saying he decreased poverty there?
He's trying to do everything he can to do that. That's for sure, and I see it. You know, he got the largest theme park in the world. He got the largest ski resorts in the world. People don't know that. So he's trying to change everything over there for his people.
Thanks to Dennis for a great interview, and thanks to you for listening. Torre Show gives you fuel to power your dreams, because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality, and this show can help. I'm on Twitter at Torre and on Instagram at Torre Show. Please subscribe, rate, and review, and tell your friends about the show. Torre Show is written by me, Torre, and produced by Chris Colbert, with help from Jason Wallace, Candid Nicole, and our photographer, Chuck Marcus. We'll be back next Wednesday with more knowledge from amazing folks, because the man can't shut us down.